I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. World leaders will meet in Paris in December to forge a new global climate deal that reduces carbon emissions. The aim of the United Nations Climate Change Conference is to come up with a strategy that caps global warming at 2 degrees Celsius over the average temperature on Earth before the Industrial Revolution.
We will be going to perhaps 55 billion tons of CO2 equivalent per annum total for the world in 2030. We're at about 50 now, so we're not on a 2-degree path.
Nick Stern is professor of economics and government at the London School of Economics and Political Science. Stern has written influential reports on the economics of climate change, and his most recent article, entitled The Low Carbon Road, is published in the December 2015 issue of Finance and Development magazine. My colleague Maureen Burke met up with Professor Stern in Lima, Peru, at the IMF World Bank annual meetings last month, where he was taking part in a seminar on climate change.
We often think of economic growth and climate responsibility as being at odds, but you believe they can work in tandem. Explain how.
Economic growth can be undermined by climate irresponsibility. We can create an environment so hostile that all our gains of recent times are reversed. If we try to implement climate responsibility by slowing or damaging or stopping growth, we will not have the political backing, the political coalition to handle climate change. So we have to do both. And when we do put them together, we can have a form of economic growth which is more efficient, less congested, less polluted, more biodiverse, cities that are much more productive because they're better places to be and the waste is less. We can see how to do this now. I think the world has changed in its understanding over the last 10 years. Technology has changed very rapidly. Experiments with policies have taught us a lot. We're seeing just how dirty and destructive burning hydrocarbons are to our health. Much clearer evidence on air pollution. If you put all those things together, I think we now see what we can do and why it is that we have to put growth and climate together and how it is that we can do exactly that.
Climate change has been happening for decades now without any real global consensus on what should be done about it. Why do you think the next 20 years are so important?
We are already at levels of concentrations of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, about 400 parts per million CO2. That's already pretty close to the kinds of levels that if we kept them that way would give a 2-degree increase. So we are going to have to act very quickly. Because we're so high already and emissions are still rising, if we fail to act in the next 20 years, we will lose the chance of holding to 2 degrees centigrade. It's already very difficult, not impossible, but another 20 years delay in turning emissions down, we would lose that opportunity and be in very dangerous territory. But there's another reason too, and that is because we, in this next 20 years, will build a tremendous amount of infrastructure and make a lot of capital investments, particularly in emerging market and developing countries. The population of cities in the world will move from about 3.5 billion to 6.5 billion in the next 30-something years, and the shape of those cities and the energy systems and transport systems will be set out largely in the next 20 years. So for those two reasons, these two decades are critical.
You speak a lot about what you call climate-smart investment when building infrastructure. What do you mean by that?
Climate-smart investment means investing in a way which has much lower emissions. Now, there are a number of ways to do that. Energy efficiency is extremely important, and the digital era has given us much greater control over how we use our energy, when we use our energy. So climate smart investment, climate smart infrastructure is about sensible use, intelligent use. It's about using new materials, whether they be insulation or low energy light bulbs, and it's about using new methods of generating the electricity which are carbon free and which are falling, some of them, very rapidly in cost. At the same time, since some of those are intermittent, so that sunshine doesn't go on all day, the wind doesn't blow all the time, storage will be a very important part of that smart, climate smart infrastructure.
How do we overcome the distributional challenges of mitigating climate change? How do you answer, for example, the argument that the advanced economies are responsible for more than half of current global emissions, but now it's the developing countries' turn to use the same cheap and dirty energy to develop?
I think you start by recognizing the inequity. It is true that the rich countries grew rich on carbon-intensive energy and took us to the kind of concentration levels we are now. Or at least, you know, a small fraction of the population, those in rich countries, have been responsible for about half of the current concentrations we see, and of course over half of the cumulative emissions in the past. And it's poor countries that get hit earliest and hardest. We should recognise that inequity. But we should also recognise that the answer to this question is to find sources of energy that can be made cheap and widely available so that those in poorer countries don't have to go through the dirty route that we in rich countries went through. That's the answer. So we've got to work to bring down those costs of the alternative ways of doing things, help with the finance of the alternative ways of doing things. That's the right way to respond to those equity questions. It's not to say, well, why doesn't everybody grow dirty for a while because we grew dirty in the past? That way is collective disaster.
So there's a UN climate change summit coming up in Paris in December. It's the 21st conference since 1992. Why is this one so important, and what will it take, in your opinion, for it to be a success?
Let me start answering that question by pointing to where the predicted emissions are likely to be in 2030 on the basis of the intended contributions that are now on the table. We will be going to perhaps 55 billion tonnes of CO2 equivalent per annum total for the world in 2030. We're at about 50 now. So, in other words, the current intentions look as if total emissions in the world will go on rising up to 2030. So we're not on a 2-degree path if all those intentions are added up. That's the way to start the definition of success in Paris. We're not going to change those numbers very much. But what we can do is recognise the big gap between those numbers and what we need for 2 degrees, and then get down to the business of saying, how do we put in place methods to raise ambition, to review what we've done, to understand how to accelerate, to bring in and innovate new technologies, to help with finance to bring the cost of capital right down. We have to test Paris's success on first recognising the gap, whilst also recognising it would have been a lot bigger if we hadn't had Paris. We'd have been in much deeper trouble without Paris. So not to be too negative, recognise the gap and then get to work within the Paris discussions on mechanisms for closing that gap. And that's where I and many others would look for the test for success for Paris.
That was Nick Stern, professor of economics and government at the London School of Economics and Political Science, talking with my colleague Maureen Burke. You can read Professor Stern's article entitled The Low Carbon Road in the December 2015 issue of Finance and Development magazine. Go to imf.org/FND or download the Finance and Development app to read it on your mobile device. You can also hear more podcasts like this one at soundcloud.com/imf-podcasts.